Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Jason Staples here on the Unconquered Podcast, once again brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks to Luis for his support of this podcast. Once again, if you're looking for a house in the greater Jacksonville area, or you're looking to sell a house, especially if you're looking to sell a house in the greater Jacksonville area, nobody's going to get you a better price, a better listing than Luis, who is going to make sure that your online presence, your photography, your smooth professional walkthrough video is going to be up there to attract people to come and take a look at your house and pay the most that you could possibly get for it. So just like that, actually, just like what Florida State's going to have to do in terms of when they hire new assistants, they're going to have to pay the most they possibly can to get the they'll pay as little as they're able, as little as possible, but they'll pay quite a bit to get a new staff in there. I've noticed that some other outlets have started to finally catch up on how much change Jimbo Fisher is going to enact in Tallahassee. I know there were a lot of people who were skeptical on whether or not Fisher would be willing, you know, that such a stubborn, arrogant guy would be willing to admit failure and fire people, you know, fire friends or whatever. And, you know, that there was some speculation, especially based on his public, you know, comments on in press conferences and so on, that, well, you know, we'll see, you know, there might be a couple changes, but, you know, can we really trust this guy to make, you know, large scale changes? And now people are starting to catch up to what I've been saying now for a few weeks. And that's that, you know, Jimbo has no problem, no issue being completely cutthroat when he has to on this stuff. He recognizes the problem and he will take care of it. Again, I on the last podcast set the over under on coaching changes at 6, based on information that I just got. I don't remember if it was yesterday or the day before. Based on that information, I'm going to go with the over at this point. I do think Odell Hagan stays on the staff, but beyond Odell, I'm not sure that that anybody else is going to remain. I'm going to take the over 6, and it might be as many as 8. I don't think you get rid of Odell because of the quality, both of the human being and how well he continues to get his players to play, and also what he brings to the table as a recruiter. So as long as Odell wants to stay, I don't imagine that he goes anywhere, but I don't think anybody else is safe. Nobody. Again, I can't go on the record on a few things at this point in terms of who is definitely out and who is who's in. I mean, I didn't realize on the last podcast that I actually broke the Randy Sanders is not going to be at Florida State news. I know that wound up being actually reported more publicly by a larger platform Josh Newberg, who had it from another source. You know, he didn't get it from me, I'm sure. They, you know, Knowles 247 or Knowles 247 reported that shortly after. But anyway, you know, he's not the only coach who knows that it's over. There are multiple other coaches that are gone. And again, based on some of the reports that I've gotten as to who Jimbo has contacted, who he contacted, and I mentioned back the week after Miami, after the Miami loss, I mentioned on those podcasts that Jimbo I was aware of multiple coaches that Jimbo had contacted, and based on the coaches that he'd contacted, it was pretty clear that there was going to be a major house cleaning at that point. If those coaches come on staff, we're looking at a very first of all, a really good recruiting staff, and secondly, some of the others that you might think, well, you know, because of recruiting or because of whatever, that guy is going to be kept. Well, no, if you bring in a couple of the people that have been discussed, you're making bigger changes. So we'll leave it at that. Honestly, on this podcast, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about Syracuse or breaking down what to expect in this game, which is the normal preview. You know, those who've been listening to this podcast for the last few years know that that's something that I take pride in doing about as well as anybody, in terms of breaking down what teams do, what Florida State's going to do to counter it, what the counter to the counter might be, how that is likely to play out, and so on. But, you know, at this point, you look at last week, as we discussed with Boston College, I mean, I mentioned then, it so much comes down to motivation now that it's almost impossible to project what's going to happen. You know what they do schematically. You know what Florida State's going to want to do against it. But so much of what happens on the field is not just related to scheme or game plan or whatever. It's just, you know, do the kids actually want to do what they're asked to do? Is there motivation to do whatever? And that really is what it boils down to in this Syracuse game. Syracuse runs that Art Briles offense. They're going to split the receivers wide. They're going to try to force you to either take guys out of the box to cover them or to single cover them. And then they're going to run you on vertical stuff and switch routes and different things to try to create problems and miscommunication in your secondary to get free runners vertically. And they'll do that while, you know, using a lot of zone read or read option principles in the running game inside. Briles scheme, they like to do a lot of power, a lot of gap blocking type stuff and package option principles along with that. They do a lot of that. Eric Dungy, their quarterback, very good runner, a guy that is a true dual threat, gets banged up pretty frequently, but, you know, a quality quarterback. And they've got, in Steve Ishmael, a wide receiver that can cause you problems down the field. They don't really have anybody else that scares you, except that given the way that they use tempo to create some problems in terms of lining up and all that, and the way that they use that read option stuff to get the quarterback on the edge and get him moving. These are things that Florida State has struggled with the last however long, and they shouldn't struggle with them against Syracuse. We saw last year they dominated this Syracuse team. There's no reason that they couldn't beat this team, that they shouldn't beat this team by 35. But Syracuse comes out with a chip on their shoulder. I mean, you got to give Dino Babers a lot of credit. This team plays proud, and they play physical. And, you know, they're going to try to jump on a Florida State team that really isn't interested in finishing the season. And that's from the top down. They obviously, you don't want to lose, but at the same point, you're not putting the same level. It's hard to go out there at a certain point when your goals are completely gone. And, you know, the question is, how long will Florida State fight if they go down a touchdown, if they go down two touchdowns, if they don't start well, what happens? So this game could go any different way, and it basically boils down to how well Florida State's going to fight. Now, there's some young guys in particular that are really pushing, that are going to grind, and they're going to try to salvage pride, and they're playing for next year. And, I think Jimbo's right by pushing the play for the draft button. Now, the thing is, you have to convince those guys that playing for the draft means playing within the system, which they're not doing. But listen, if it was me trying to coach the defense at this point, I would have half a mind to say, I'm lining up in Jet Robber, which is the old Mickey Andrews base defense. I'm going to press man Jet Robber pretty much the entire game. So it's man free with a robber over the middle who can be sort of a quasi spy against quarterback run type stuff as well. And I'm just going to man to man. And if you're going to, I'm going to emphasize just doing that well and letting the defense, turning the defensive line loose and saying, this is how we're going to do it. Just so that, you know what, we're not going to ask you anything except that you do that. You play your gap, and you play it downhill. You release downhill, and we're going to play man-to-man because we, you know, that's the way it's going to work, and do that entirely in this game. And yeah, you'll give up some big plays because they'll switch you, they'll rub you, they'll do different things that will cause some problems for some of that press man stuff. But, you know, at least just challenge your players to go out and just dominate your guy. Go out and just do that. That would be the approach I think I would consider taking at this point in this game, just because of the motivation issues and because of some of the issues with getting guys to play their assignments. Problem is, you can't really do that against Clemson. You know, Clemson will come out and you've got to have the ability to play some zone. You've got to have the ability to vary some things against Clemson, or they'll eat you alive. So less so certainly with Bryant than with Deshaun Watson last year. But again, you have to be able to vary a little bit. But you know, you can still go with a couple bases with a couple base calls that's all we're going to do. And we're just going to do those really well. And we're going to work on that as fundamentals, those as our fundamentals in practice. And that's all we're doing. So that's especially against tempo. I mean, I think that's a viable approach. It's something I would consider doing. But in any case, Florida State should be able to dominate this team up front on both sides of the ball. They should be able to run the football, particularly on the edge. They should be able to get some play-action throws deep down the middle. That's something Blackman throws pretty well. Getting over the top of that quarter's coverage that Syracuse likes to run, they should be able to get to make some plays. But, again, everything comes down to whether or not this team comes in actually wanting to play the way that they should. And I have no idea what's going to happen there. I have no idea what's going to happen in this game. I'm not even going to make a prediction because, you know, again, what you're after watching last week, you're going to put some expectation of Florida State on beating anybody, of actually playing well enough to win. But you're really going to bet Syracuse to beat Florida State, given the talent difference and given that Syracuse really has not played that well this year? They've managed to win a couple of games, frankly, they shouldn't have. So this is a game that, you know, you if you feel strongly that you know exactly what's going to happen, then you either have a lot better information than the rest of us, or you're perhaps insane. Because it's just this Florida State team. You go back again. I said this the last podcast. Go back and watch the first half of that Alabama game. It's a totally different team. It's unreal to see what that team looked like then, and what they look like now. It's really amazing. And again, it just shows you the distance between elite and bad isn't actually that big a lot of times. It can be razor thin. Because this team was flat bad last week, and they were elite in the first half against Alabama. Amazing. Well, I'm going to get to some question and answer, some mailbag stuff here, addressing some things that I hadn't gotten to, again, on the last podcast. I answered a couple questions, but in dealing with possible coaching hires and some other things, I didn't have time to address as many questions as I'd like. So I'm going to go ahead and get to some of those in this podcast. The first one from Raven Knoll on Twitter: didn't you have this team going undefeated? Yep. Yes, I did. And boy, was I wrong. Wow. I knew, and I said then that I was taking a good risk with making that projection, but felt like if the season got off to the start it might, against Alabama, where they looked like they could be a championship team going into the season, that if things started well, then this team could potentially go undefeated. Well, things started about as poorly as they could, and they went from a team that, you know, may have had a viable chance of going undefeated had they, you know, taken care of a couple details. They looked like the better team against Alabama on both sides of the ball, and then, you know, overlooked a couple details, and then all of a sudden, this collapse has been epic. But yeah, boy, like to have that one back. All right, next one from Mike A.T. on Facebook. Number one, why aren't 2+ year players being benched that don't play their assignment? You know, that's a good question. I think that's something that we're going to see moving forward. I think the other, normally what you do is you push those guys to do what they need to do. You expect them to do what they need to do. And for the most part, they had played their assignment in previous games. And then you get to the Boston College game and you start getting what you got. And at that point, you know, previous to that, you don't want to take the risk with guys that aren't necessarily getting their playing their assignments because they don't know better in practice or in previous games. So you don't want to bench a guy for not being quite as good when the next option isn't better. At this point, once you're at a point where you're really, you know, the season is completely pretty much shot and guys are starting to freelance and not play their assignment, yeah, you start putting the young guys in there and you say, well, you know, if you're not going to play your assignment, I'm going to let this guy figure it out on the job. And, you know, you'll play less. So I would expect that stuff would start to happen a little bit more as we move forward in the season. Question number two from Mike A.T. I know Akers is a 5-star running back recruit, but 18 carries versus 4 carries for Rasul and 4 for Green like versus Boston College seems like a problem. He can't be that much better than those guys 7 games in terms of hitting the right hole, running routes, blitz pickup. Well, first of all, again, this gets back to the question of what are you trying to build toward at this point in the season? And frankly, Akers is that much better than those guys, at least in terms of where he might be within a game or two or 2-3 games. I mean, by next year, and this kid is generational good in terms of the talent at running back. So yeah, I understand that. Now, that said, I've long been a proponent of giving more carries to Rasul. I've felt like Green probably should get a little bit more look. I'd like to see Green and Rasul get some opportunities on the kick return stuff. I mean, finally, they're back there. They should have been back there from the beginning of the year, as I mentioned, even in camp, that it made no sense to have Derwin James and Keith Gavin back there. And you can make the case that that having Keith Gavin back there against Miami cost them another game or two because of not having a healthy wide receiver and arguably your second best wide receiver. Not having him healthy costs you dearly, you know, in the games after Miami. So, you know, and putting him back there and taking that risk versus, well, you know, you got a deep running back stable. Why not use those guys? It's unconscionable. But anyway, I think, again, I would split those carries a little bit more, but they're really trying to get Akers. They're trying to get him comfortable and get him to the place where he is. He's developed into what he potentially will be. So that's a lot of that. I do agree though that getting a few more carries for Rasul and even for Green may not be out of order here. Next question. This one's again from Facebook. Would Tony Pecoraro be someone Florida State might look at if Miller is not retained as linebacker coach? I followed his career as he was a defense coordinator at my alma mater, Alcorn State, for 2 years before going to Southern Miss. And Tony Pecoraro, just for the record, is a Florida State graduate who is a student assistant back in 2002, 2003. Worked with quarterbacks at that time, but he has since he GA'd actually at Florida State and then left from there to become the defensive coordinator, tends to work with linebackers. Good coach and would be a viable candidate for the linebacker coach when Miller is not retained. But I'm not sure that he's going to be the guy, but I do think that he's the kind of guy that they would look at. Now, the question is, is he willing to take a step back in terms of a position coach from being the Southern Miss defensive coordinator? Career-wise, is that that would be a tough decision to make. Do you want to take a backwards move in terms of career path or in terms of going from defensive coordinator to position coach, but go back to your alma mater and make probably a good bit more money, certainly a good bit more money? Or do you want to try to continue to move up by sticking as a defensive coordinator and maybe trying to ride your way up to have a quicker path to a head coaching position somewhere or a bigger defensive coordinating position somewhere? That would be a tough question for Pecoraro to answer, and it would be, you know, so that means even if he is on that list, which I assume he would be one of the guys they'd consider, even if he would be on that list, I'm not sure what his decision would be. I would guess that he might come. But the next question is, since Fisher is almost certainly going to hire a defensive coordinator who is a secondary coach, and again, my money is on Derek Ansley, the secondary coach at Alabama. The thing that you want to do is you want to make sure that whoever is on your staff gels well with your choice of defensive coordinator. You want to make sure that coordinator can work well with whoever else you're hiring. So ideally, let's say, hypothetically, Fisher hires Ansley as his defensive coordinator. You want to make sure that Ansley talks to and has some ability to choose, to have a, not necessarily to choose, but to have some say in the selection process of the other coaches that he's going to be working with. So that is going to be not just a Jimbo Fisher decision, I wouldn't think. It'll be a decision that's made by Jimbo Fisher, but with some input from the guy that he actually hires as a defensive coordinator. But again, Pecoraro is one of those guys that would be a viable candidate. As would be, you know, someone like Kevin Scherer from Georgia. But again, I think Scherer probably stays at Georgia. But again, you hire Ansley as the defense coordinator. Maybe he wants to pay extra to get a guy like Scherer on staff with him, who he's coached with before. So, you know, you just never know exactly how those relationships are going to work out, how that's going to play out in terms of what the preference is for the next defensive coordinator, and also in line with what Jimbo Fisher has on his list. And again, those guys have to talk, to communicate, to say, okay, could we work together? You know, that's a big part of that decision. Okay, and the next question, again, from Facebook. In your last pod, you mentioned Corey Bell, Florida's defensive backs coach, as someone Florida State might be interested in, if not retained at Florida. I think they'd be interested in him even if he was going to be retained. Is Terrell Buckley someone you think Florida State will go after? I think Buckley is going to be on the list. I don't think he's at the top of the list. My guess is that he would not be number one on the list. Mainly because I think number one on the list should be and is likely to be, in terms of defensive backs coach, other than Ansley, who I again, my money's on him as the coordinator. But if you're hiring two defensive backs coaches, which I think they are, my money would be on the top of that list being Corey Raymond, the defensive backs coach at LSU. And if you can get Corey Raymond, listen, I love Terrell Buckley. T-Buck's, you know, one of the greats in Florida State history. He's a good coach, pretty good recruiter. But Corey Raymond is someone that if you have the chance to hire him at that position, you do it. And you might take Corey Bell over him as well, over Terrell Buckley. That's a little bit more debatable. But, you know, again, I think those three names that are probably people that Florida State will consider. But again, I think if you have the choice, if you have the ability to hire Corey Raymond from LSU, you do that. We'll see what happens. Again, so much until we get to the point where the hires are starting to be made. So much of this is going to be speculation. I mean, there's whispers in the back end of things, and periodically, just because my network happens to connect with, say, a coach who might get contacted by someone, I actually get to hear a little bit from that side. But we're not going to hear much from the Florida State side, because Fisher ain't going to be talking about this. He's not going to talk about who he's talking to, who's on his list, and so on. So really, a lot of this is going to be speculation, unless, you know, there's some indication from the other side that a coach is interested. And, you know, in some cases, if that coach is interested and he would be near the top of a list of, you know, who top coaches are in the field, then yeah, then you got to know that Fisher would consider that guy. So Next question from Mike Palios on Twitter. Why don't I ever see our star player getting in any of these guys' faces? Well, main reason is that you haven't been in the locker room or behind the scenes, because it has been done. He has gotten in these guys' faces, and some of them have just really just waved him off, even after things have gotten more than, you know, just getting in a guy's face. You know, Derwin James has done basically everything you possibly could do as a leader to try to get these guys to play. And at a certain point, there's not much more you can do. You have to have more than one guy, and you have to have, you know, some other, you have to have some other, you have to have guys that actually want to follow on that stuff. So yeah, the culture is where it is, and it's frustrating and infuriating, but that's just, there's no changing it at this point. It has to, things are going to have to run their course. Next question from Kevin Cruz on Twitter. Jimbo doesn't seem like the kind of guy who lets things slide. Was this more of a win at all costs approach beginning in 2014? And I'll put that together with the next question by Eric Jones. What are the cultural issues at Florida State, and how do you change them? And I'll put that together as well with O'Cobb's question as well. What does Florida State need to do going into next year? I guess I'll answer that last one sort of separately. But as far as Jimbo doesn't seem like the kind of guy who lets things slide, again, on the last podcast, one of the things I talked about was how, as a coach, one of the reasons that it's easier to be a change agent than it is to be a maintainer, it's easier to get a program to turn around quickly when you take over as a new guy, is as a new guy, you can basically be a no BS. I'm going to, you're going to walk the line, or I'm going to play someone else. And I have no commitment to you. I have no, I've made no promises to you, and you're going to do things the right way, or you're not going to play. And you can do that stuff when you are newer, but then eventually the expectations that come with, you know, once you have a program up and running, and first of all, you've made commitments to players, you've recruited all those people, the relationship thing is involved and all that. And you actually have to start winning games rather than, you know what, we're going to sacrifice some wins for discipline because that's going to pay dividends in the future. Well, now once you get to the future and you've got a guy that probably can't win without, and he knows you can't win without him, it's harder to sustain that stuff. It's harder to say, you know what, we're going to sit you, even if it means we lose a game, we're going to play this other guy over you because we need to make the point that people do things right. And generally speaking, I mean, when they've had any depth behind guys, they've done that. But sometimes you end up with, you know, without this guy, we can't play. And then sometimes, you know, things slide. And that's pretty easy for stuff to happen. And that results in cultural problems. The biggest problem that Florida State has culture in terms of culture issues, I mean, Eric Jones asked this question, what are the cultural issues? How do you change them? Is you see that players show some sense of entitlement. They don't come at things with the level of intensity every rep, every play, every game, every practice, every rep in practice, every rep in the off season has to be full on 100%. Nobody's going to outwork me. Nobody's going to beat me because I'm going to physically dominate this person. I'm going to do things the right way. That's what we don't see right now. And that starts in the off season. I saw this back in 2000, 2001, 2002. When I got to Florida State and first as a walk-on in 2000, the last year of the dynasty, I mean, you could see the intensity. You could feel it. The intensity of every play, every off-season rep of everything. I mean, those guys worked their tails off. And I remember being just, wow, this is, you know, trying to up my intensity level to try to match that. And by 2002, guys were trying to skip out on workouts. They're trying to sneak out and, you know, move to the back of the line. I don't want to take this extra rep. You know, more interested in doing some other stuff than just being the team that nobody's going to outwork us. Nobody's going to, that is what's lacking right now. And that starts in the off season. That starts with off season workouts. That starts with players. And this is where, you know, again, coaches set the tone in large measure, but at a certain point, players have to be responsible for that stuff in the culture. Now, where you can help yourself is the strength and conditioning staff and the strength and conditioning coach have probably more impact on culture than anybody tends to realize. Those guys set the tone, because what you have to do is you have to find ways of building in the process where players are taking leadership, but you're guiding it and you're finding ways for those guys to reinforce this ethos of we're going to outwork, we're going to outsmart, we're going to outperform on a daily basis in the off season. We're going to get our wins now. You have to do that with those guys, and you have to set that in the off season. So that's to start with the strength staff. How do you change the cultural issues? I think first of all, you have to take a long, hard look at the off season conditioning staff and the off season conditioning program, and say, what can we do to reinforce the kind of toughness, the kind of chip on the shoulder attitude, to put the dog in him in the off season? What can we do to reinforce that may be a little different than what we're doing now to get these guys to bind together? You want it to be kind of like an initiation rite every off season, where guys are being incorporated into this new order of things, to where each player is pushing the other guys to be that much better. And by being a part of this getting through the hard, you know, the hard stuff that you're doing in the off season, you feel a sense of privilege to be a part of this group. That's what you're trying to do. It's kind of like boot camp. You've got to build that kind of camaraderie to build the kind of culture that you need. And then that has to carry into the season, and you've got to be able to work that through with, in terms of accountability from rep one of camp all the way to the end of the bowl, that you have to make sure that guys are living out that kind of culture. So that gets to the next question. What does Florida State need to do going into next year? Well, I mean, it is going to need to be a full-on house cleaning, or, you know, to talk about what Jimbo's thinking, you burn it to the ground and you restart. Jimbo, again, emphasizing the process that he wants to see, and bringing in voices that are going to help players live to those, and are going to hold the players to be accountable to live to that process. Next question from Tyrone Battle. How do you handle the season from now on? Do you burn red shirts to get experience, or just go with what you have? My answer to that is you keep the red shirts on the guys who are redshirting. There's no reason to pull a guy's red shirt now. You're not winning a national title by pulling that off him. You're playing for next year more than anything. So keep those red shirts on those guys and don't waste them. Of the rest who are playing already, you play the ones who are consistently showing the most effort, who are doing what's right, and if anything, you favor the young guys. And again, you know, you could, if you simplify certain things and you just play jet robber the whole time, yeah, you can play more young guys doing that on defense. Defense, typically young guys can play a little quicker on because of the nature of defense. So yeah, you can do that stuff, and you favor the young guys if need be. If there's any doubt, you favor the young guys. You give them more and more reps to reinforce this, that those who do things right and show the most effort are going to play. But again, you keep the red shirts on the guys who are redshirting. There's no reason to pull those off. It doesn't help them. You may ruin them by playing them too early. Raven Knoll, another question. Here's a question. How do you not install an Akers Wildcat package when your young quarterback is playing so poorly? Should have started reps a month ago. Well, first of all, they actually have an Akers Wildcat package, a couple plays for that. But that doesn't do anything for helping your young quarterback who's actually not playing so poorly. Supporting cast around Blackman has not been real good, but you know, he's been all right. And the other thing is, it doesn't necessarily help Akers' development. What you're trying to do right now, you're not trying to stopgap with stuff that you're not, that's not going to be core to what you're doing. You're trying to get better at the basic stuff. You're reinforcing that this is stuff that, given the skill set of Blackmon, given the skill set of the guys on this offense, this is stuff we're going to have to be able to do next year. You better start getting good at that now. So that, I think that's a big reason. Frank Cimento, did Telvin and Joyner come to Florida State with leadership skill, or was it developed? Apply your answer to the current team. What's the problem? Well, I already talked a little bit about what the problem is. Joyner came to Florida State a natural-born leader. I mean, he came in, that guy from day one as a freshman was that. Now, Telvin was a fiery guy, natural in terms of the leadership skills, but he finally bought in 2013 and became a bit of a leader. And you have to have a bit of both. Now, if you look at the answer in terms of the current team, Derwin James came in like LaMarcus Joyner, a natural-born leader. So did Akers, and so did Blackmon, some of these young guys, definitely. Derwin came in like that. But what's happened is the guys like Telvin, who might have developed in terms of benefiting from various lessons and becoming that additional leader to help with that, those guys haven't developed. Some of that is due to perhaps some errors by the coaching staff in terms of culture creation. And again, I look at the offseason primarily for that. I think another big factor, though, has to be some of the lesser success that you saw the last couple of years. It's much easier to build leadership and build that winning culture when you're winning and when you have strong leadership on prior teams. But again, Florida State in 2012, when Telvin was starting to grow a little bit as a leader, but between 2012 and 2013, the switch flipped. 2012, Florida State had a redshirt senior in EJ Manuel, who was a leader. You had a bunch of guys on that team who started to teach those guys, the younger guys who ended up being leaders on the 2013 team. Those guys wound up setting the stage. They prepared the way for what happened in 2013. You had guys like Jacoby McDaniel who were, you know, on both teams, but you had a large number of guys that were part of that 2012 team that they were starting to experience success and starting to see that, you know what, when we do things this way, it works. They bought in further in the offseason of 2013 and they came in locked and loaded. That's what has to happen. But that helps when you have quarterback leadership, when the quarterback position is stable. Florida State hasn't been there in a while. 2015, 2016, 2017, Florida State's not had a stable, experienced quarterback with, you know, the talent to lead since 2014. That's been a big problem. And that's also meant that certain games on the margins, you know, if you have a great quarterback, you win those games, like with Jameis Winston or Deshaun Watson. When you're a little bit inferior at that position, it's a lot harder. And then you get a couple bad breaks. Momentum starts to go away a little bit, and guys start, the guys who might have become a little bit of the big-time leader, like a Telvin, those guys who would have really bought in and been real positive influences, well, you know, some of those, the guys who could have been that, once you start losing a little bit, once you have a couple bad breaks and a couple things go the wrong way, they start leading in the wrong direction. And that's what happened to the current team. Get a few bad breaks, have a, you know, a little bit of a talent gap and leadership gap at the quarterback position, and some of the guys who would have potentially developed into leaders in the right direction start questioning things and you lead in the wrong direction. Success builds success on that. And, you know, you lose a game like the Georgia Tech game in 2015. You lose, you know, games like the UNC game in the Clemson game in 2016. And guys start questioning things. Games, you got to win those games to further reinforce that our process, what we're doing pays off. Because it's so important that you not focus on the outcome, but eventually outcomes do matter. You can't focus on the outcome. Leadership demands that you focus on the proper ways to get to the outcome rather than worrying about winning. But then when you stop winning, you start questioning the process, and then those guys who are questioning the process lead others to do it, and then you have a serious problem. Then we get Burkle0514 on Twitter asks, isn't it on the coaches, though, to get kids not to buy into outside talk? So this is a response to my discussion about why outside voices do have impact. And yeah, it's on the coaches to do that, but they're not gods. They're coaches. And they can only be around the players so much. And the way that you get kids not to buy into outside talk is eventually the outcomes start to match what you're hoping for. So when the process is right and the outcomes start to match the results are what you hope for, then you begin to buy into the process and you ignore those outside voices. When the results aren't quite what you expect and they're not, you know, the results aren't positive, then maybe you start questioning the process. Maybe you start listening to those outside voices. That's where that goes. And once that starts happening, the only way for coaches to get guys to buy back in is ultimately the only way it's going to work is you start having success again. Otherwise, you end up needing new coaches. You need new voices because you've lost them. And that's where they are now. Next question from Hunter. If Sunseri becomes a quarterback coach, where do you put Damian Craig? I'm not impressed with his wide receiver coach work. Well, first of all, his wide receiver coach work is hard to assess because of who he's working with and where. So I don't know. But it's not clear that Sunseri would be the quarterback coach. I mean, you could probably put Tino Sunseri at wide receivers. You could put him at tight end. You can do a number of things with what you do there. It depends on the makeup of the rest of the staff. I'm not clear that they would put either one of those guys at the quarterback position. Depending on who they hire, we'll see. Either one of those guys could coach quarterbacks. Either one could coach another position. Now, in general, when it comes to positions that are difficult to coach, the quarterback position, wide receiver position, and offensive line are the most difficult positions to coach. And I think right along with those is defensive backs. I think quarterback and wide receiver are the two toughest positions to coach. After that, offensive line and defensive backs. So you need to have guys that can really coach at those spots. Otherwise, you wind up having some problems. Florida State's had some problems there. And again, Dossie's a pretty good wide receiver coach. But you see the problems that Florida State's had there, even with a pretty decent wide receiver coach. He's not elite. And you know, you put an elite guy there and maybe you get a lot better results. I mean, we'll see. But ideally, you want the best possible coaches on your staff to be at quarterback, offensive line, and wide receiver in terms of the offense. And then on defense, you really need your defensive backs in particular to be especially well-schooled. You need to have those guys knowing where they're supposed to go, what kind of pass-offs they're going to have, all communication, all that stuff. You've got to have great coaches at those spots. Next question. I know your thoughts on Kevin Steele, even though I like him. What about Dave Aranda? This is from Jeffrey Sullins. I think he'd be a good fit with this talent. Any chance? Had LSU been in a position where their season was completely going to tank, you can make a case for him wanting out. I don't think he's going to end up leaving LSU, and I doubt that there's a real chance at him. He's a really good coach, though. Brandon asks, do you think not making a bowl game could be beneficial for the reason of getting a head start on hiring coaches and recruiting? No, I do not think not making a bowl game would be beneficial for anything. First of all, there's dead periods and quiet periods during a lot of the bowl season. So you can't do a whole lot of recruiting during most of that period anyway. So that's not helpful. Secondly, the coaches that you're going to hire, a lot of those coaches are going to be coaching somewhere else during the bowl season. And you're not going to be able to get all of those guys on your staff for bowl season. So it's not like you can get a head start by doing that. So the thing that's really most important about bowl season is you get 15 extra practices. It's like a whole spring practice. When you got a young quarterback, you got a bunch of true freshmen who are going to be depended upon next year, you better get those practices. you better make sure that you're able to make use of as much as possible to get fundamentals taken care of, to make sure that guys know where they're supposed to, what they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to do, where they're supposed to stand, and so on. So making a bowl game is still really important. And yeah, the odds are presently against it, but this team is absolutely capable of getting to a bowl game from here. Got to beat Syracuse. You made things a lot more difficult by hitting bottom against Boston College, but whatever. FB Knoll asks, what about John Shoup at Tennessee? Seems to have a good rep, but I don't know much about him. I don't think he's a real option for Florida State. I expect Shoup to end up in the Big Ten again. Good coordinator. I don't think he fits all that well with what Fisher wants. But again, I mean, he's a good coordinator, so you never know. But again, I wouldn't bet on it, and I think he probably ends up in the Big Ten somewhere. Dom asks, I know you're already full on questions. This will be my last question, actually. But any chance with Orgeron getting the hook likely, would FSU get Canada? Well, first of all, it would be awesome if Florida State did have a guy like, did have Matt Canada on staff, if only because you could get 80,000 people singing "O Canada," akin to the animals of Section B for baseball. But no, first of all, Orgeron's not getting fired at LSU this year. He's not. They can't afford it. They can't afford his buyout. Which there's no. It's unreal that they gave him a large buyout. But whatever. They had all the leverage. There was no reason. They didn't even need to put a buyout on his contract. Stupid to have a buyout, but they can't afford to fire him, so he's not getting the hook, and Florida State's not hiring Matt Canada. Not going to happen. Wouldn't be surprised to see some FSU staffers, maybe even Fisher, go and take a look at what Canada does. I mean, that staffs always travel and take a look at what they do, and I know they've studied some of that stuff before, so they may study some of that stuff and may send somebody to study with Canada on some of those things. But no, I don't expect Canada to be a hire. I've already sort of given my view on what's most likely to be some of the places where Fisher would look on the last podcast. But Canada is very unlikely because again, Orgeron's not getting the hook, and LSU is likely going to keep both coordinators at least one more year. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today here on the Unconquered Podcast. Once again, this podcast is brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. If you have any real estate needs in the greater Jacksonville area, let Luis know. Give him a call. Information in the show notes. And get the best possible service and a very hardworking real estate agent in the greater Jacksonville area. Once again, thanks to Lewis for sponsoring the podcast. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.